Would he even know who I was or what I was talking about? It was a no-go. So, silently, the three of us just sat in our seats and watched him disappear in the rearview mirror. It was the closest I ever came to meeting him. I've been hesitant to write another book featuring AC/DC, in which one of the main characters in the story, Malcolm, now has a degenerative condition. I'm cognizant of that, just as I'm cognizant of dredging up things from the past when the man himself can't respond. But had he been in good health, there's no reason to think Malcolm would have cooperated anyway. The Youngs are one of the most private and secretive families in the music business. They have a long history of not telling their stories to biographers, perhaps with good reason. This, above all else, is a book for a man I've long admired, Bon Scott, not for AC/DC. It's also for people who bought Back in Black or heard Bon's apogee Highway to Hell over the closing credits of the Hollywood blockbuster Iron Man 2 and want to know the story of a man whose weaknesses and addictions finally destroyed him. The history of AC/DC, the very existence of the band itself, is anchored in the story of one exceptional but ultimately wasteful man, Bon. Malcolm's dementia doesn't prohibit the writing of that history. As he said himself in Sheffield to a New Musical Express reporter in 1978, a quote even used in the Bonfire box set released by AC/DC in honour of Bon, "I'm sick of reading shit. You will print the truth." Okay then, Mal. If you want blood, you've got it. The world's collective memory of Bon deserves the restoration of some honesty and truth, not more mythologizing. Official accounts of AC/DC's history, such as Australian ABC television's Blood and Thunder, The Sound of Alberts, aired on the BBC as The Easy Beats to AC/DC, The Story of Aussie Rock, or VH1's Behind the Music, AC/DC, are designed only to reinforce prevailing myths about him and the band. How can these myths seriously go on being unchallenged when David Krebs, a man whose management company, Lieber Krebs, oversaw AC/DC between 1979 and 1981, the period when they released their most commercially successful albums, doesn't think Brian Johnson wrote the lyrics for Back in Black? As he told me from his home in Malibu, California, "I was really amazed because when I read The Youngs, I went and looked up the AC/DC discography and, yeah, Back in Black is written by the brothers and Brian Johnson. I don't believe that." There was also an element of personal whimsy involved. I wanted to take readers back to a time when AC/DC was the most exciting rock and roll band on earth. Not what it is today, a corporate brand with only one original member, Angus Young, left standing from the lineup Bon himself knew in the 1970s. I wanted to recreate, in words, a small part of what I regard as the greatest era of rock music, the late 70s, a time that gave rise to the genre we now know as classic rock. Record stores sold vinyl. MTV didn't exist yet. The internet, with its services that would change popular music, YouTube, Pandora, Spotify, and iTunes, was decades away. So many of the great bands of the 1970s have either stopped playing music altogether or perform without their original lineups in casinos, wineries, or on passenger liners. A special time for music has been lost forever. To do all this with any effectiveness, I had to immerse myself in everything that was available to me. But when it comes to AC/DC, impenetrable to outsiders, a band that strikes fear into the hearts of former members and employees because the Young family remains so rich, intimidating and powerful, information is not easy to come by. A friend of Brian Johnson warned me, "They are all way, way past any possible human tolerance on having their words or actions distorted just to sell a story." Another insider told me that the secrecy around the band is worse than the CIA, worse than the Church of Scientology. He wasn't kidding. Says Graham Yogi Harrison.